today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Katie Talento, on a theology of eating good food.
When it comes to what's actually changing my life and my health on a day-to-day basis, the good news is that the power is all mine. It's all ours. Yes, that, you know, conventional medicine has a role, but really, even your white coat doctor is not coming to save you either. Like, that guy's not there all day when you're making choices. And we're required and obligated by our duty to God to steward our body and our effort and our vitality. And so that gives us power and it gives us responsibility.
Katie Talento next. Epidemiologist and former White House health advisor Dr. Katie Talento wants us to take responsibility for our health, particularly when it comes to the food we consume. She's executive director of the Alliance of Healthcare Sharing Ministries. Spencer Dahlke is with her to get the details.
How has your background in epidemiology and naturopathy led you to focus, study the American diet?
I think really being an epidemiologist, which nobody used to even be able to pronounce until COVID, now people kind of know what that is. But being an epidemiologist, really what that is understanding and learning about how to design studies and how to interpret them and how to run them, how to run the statistics that are involved in those studies, how to prevent against bias in those studies. That's really helpful when you're looking at public health statistics. And we're seeing, you know, chronic disease rates skyrocketing, and we're seeing a bunch of, you know, study finds this and study finds that. It helps to be able to sort of, you know, look at that data and see, does it really find this or that? And then as a naturopath, of course, you know, one thing that you don't see enough of in conventional medicine, as opposed to holistic or naturopathic medicine, is the use of nutrition as the greatest medicine that we have. You know, it was Hippocrates that actually said, let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food. We spend billions of dollars on the research enterprise about like what one tiny little pill can do to you if you take it once a day or two times a day. But think about the pounds and pounds we put in our body every day of food and beverages. And so to think that that doesn't have a far greater impact on our health than anything we're taking pharmaceutically, it's lunacy. So naturopathic medicine really appreciates that and really tries to harness the power of food and many other things as one of the primary priorities for getting our health back together or understanding why it is falling apart.
What sort of experience have you had? I know you've worked in public policy some, and now you're with, you know, the Alliance of Healthcare Sharing Ministries. How have these experiences sort of ignited that passion for pointing out our diet and how it might need to be changed?
Yeah, I mean, maybe from a negative perspective, probably, as to what doesn't work. I mean, I spent most of my career working for various Republican senators in the United States Senate and committees that oversee the Department of Health and Human Services and the public health enterprise. And then after 15 years in the Senate, I went to work for the White House on the Domestic Policy Council doing health policy advice for President Trump in his first term. Honestly, what my takeaway from that whole experience is Washington isn't coming to save us. Nobody's going to make your health better, certainly not government policy. When it comes to what's actually changing my life and my health on a day-to-day basis, the good news is that the power is all mine. It's all ours. And so, yes, that, you know, conventional medicine has a role, but really, even your white coat doctor is not coming to save you either. Like, that guy's not there all day when you're making choices and that you're poisoning yourself all day. So really, we have this power. We have this amazing agency and free will that God gave us. And we're required and obligated by our duty to God to steward our body and our effort and our vitality. And so that gives us power and it gives us responsibility.
Speaking of like these foods, you had some comments about a CDC report finding certain statistics about our digesting lots of ultra-processed foods. We talk a lot about, you know, it's like, oh yeah, ultra-processed food, not great for us. Would you tell us though about what you noticed in this report and kind of what concerns you about it?
Yeah. So every year the CDC does this national health and nutrition evaluation, and it really is basically our best and most ongoing way to measure what people are eating, how their nutritional status is. And the most recent report came out that showed that American kids basically consumed 2/3 of their daily calories from ultra-processed food. Adults aren't much better. For us, it's 53% of our daily calories from ultra-processed food. So what does that really mean? What is ultra-processed food? And part of the problem here, the government hasn't actually defined this. California actually just passed a law recently to do so. And it's important for the government to do so so that they can start to make policy around whether ultra-processed food is allowed to be purchased from food stamps or to be included in school lunches and all the many and, you know, millions of places where the government influences or outright purchases food. So it would be useful to have this category defined. But the kind of working definition that I use and that, you know, the medical profession and the health providers use is basically food that your great grandparents wouldn't have recognized as food, and also that you today could not actually assemble in your kitchen with normal ingredients. So it requires industrial processes and chemicals and inputs. And what that ends up meaning is that we might be putting in energy into our body. Like there is some sort of matter that is being converted into fire inside of our body. So there is calorie and heat coming from what we're putting in, but there is not necessarily any nutritional content in that food, and certainly not the nutritional content that our bodies were designed to absorb and to receive, and that our great-grandparents and their great-grandparents would have recognized and would have prepared for themselves.
How much of our calories are coming from these ultra-processed foods?
Over 50%, so 53% for adults and 2/3 for kids.
Wow.
And, you know, the primary, the CDC goes into, you know, what is the food that we're talking about? For them, they identified primarily sandwiches is the top category. So what they mean is burgers, hot dogs, but really just normal sandwiches that like my mom and your mom put in our lunches when we went with some Wonder Bread or some commercial grocery store bread and Kraft cheese slices and some processed deli meats. I thought that was healthy when I was growing up. We all thought like that was made with mom and her love, and she put it in a little plastic sandwich baggie. And actually, you know, the plastic sandwich baggie is a horrible estrogenic endocrine disruptor. And the processed bread and the processed meats and the processed cheese that isn't really cheese, it's just seed oils. Like the whole thing is a disaster. And that's the best kind of sandwich that you could have with the most love. Like you look at a fast food burger or a, you know, hoagie from some fast food restaurant, it's even worse. So even what we think of as healthy really isn't. It's ultra processed. Couldn't have made that from scratch.
What population/demographics are at greater risk?
There's nobody who's left out of the risk category. All of us are facing this. But for the adults, the least healthy group were the young adults, as you might imagine, the age 19 to 39. They consumed almost 54% of their calories. And then adults that were my age, age 40 to 59, they consumed about 53%. And seniors were a little under 52%. So really all adults are kind of right there at a little bit more than half of our calories. Really, it's the kids that are the biggest concern for me. I'm worried about adults too, but adults, we can change our behavior and we have the power to take agency and make changes if we want to. Kids, they don't know better. And what's really scary to me is when I think about the trajectory from an infant who's on breast milk to then sort of toxic sludge in formula, right? Which is very, very bad for babies. It's better than starvation for sure, but it doesn't have all the healthy fats and proteins and nutrients that are in mother's milk. And there are lots of pesticides and chemicals, contaminants really. And then they go right into that sort of weaning off breast milk or formula onto these first baby foods is how they're marketed. And they're really just rice cereals or oat cereals. They're kind of like carby, sugary porridge kind of. And that conditions a child for having white beige food for the rest of their childhood, which is what we see kids wanting. You know, it basically carby, sugary food is what little kids like. They want their chicken nuggets. They want their rice. They want their bread. You know, that's what they end up liking. It's hard to get anything else in them. Even if you, okay, I'll give you bread, but how about whole grain bread? No, they don't like it. It's weird. It doesn't taste right because they've been conditioned from infancy to want sweet, carby stuff. But that is not what they were given 300 years ago, what you would feed a baby, or 200 years ago, or 1,000 years ago, what you would feed a baby. And it's not what our bodies are designed by God to consume. And yet it's reprogramming. It's like conditioning our palate in these very formative years. And it's very difficult to change that after the fact. My husband and I adopted two children when they were 10 and 11, and their palates were fully formed. It was almost impossible to change what it was that they loved, what they considered comfort food, what they didn't like. It's very hard to change that. They didn't like shrimp then. They still don't like shrimp now in their 20s. When you have kids that are consuming 2/3 of their calories from ultra-processed food, we're talking about a lifetime of challenges for those kids, greater health conditions than even our generations have, which are unprecedented in human history. We really are the sickest, the fattest, the saddest when it comes to mental illness, the most infertile, and yet the most medicated population in human history. Something's gone completely wrong. And when you look at these kinds of statistics in terms of the absolute inputs that are coming into our body, well, it's not hard to understand why the outcomes are so bad.
Well, my guest today is Katie Talento. She's the executive director of the Alliance of Healthcare Sharing Ministries, an epidemiologist and naturopathic doctor. Thinking a little more theologically about this, I am considering, this is just such a funny example. My friends and I like to laugh about it a lot. Elijah in the wilderness, he like kind of looks up and he's like asking God, like, God, please kill me because I'm the only one who cares about you. And God gives him a snack and a nap and he's feeling better. Considering the, like you mentioned, the way that God has designed our bodies, food actually, if we're nourishing our bodies, we're also nourishing our souls. Long term, what sort of effects on our bodies and, like you said, on our mental health, do these sort of additives, pesticides, disruptors that you mentioned in our food do to our bodies?
You know, there are lots of toxins in our world, right? For instance, if you think about people 100 years ago, so in the early 1900s, they had never seen plastic. They had never touched plastic. And now think about how much plastic is everywhere, right? I mean, there's nothing that isn't plastic in our lives, including in our food. And the fact that plastic has endocrine disrupting qualities, and then we see all this infertility and hormonal chaos in people, and even just hormonal chaos not related to fertility, but like even just not specifically about the sex hormones. I mean, you get adrenal chaos. People are having massive cortisol spikes and hormone challenges that are disrupting their circadian rhythms. You combine that with people never going outside and seeing the sun. So our circadian rhythms are totally off, which affects our fertility, but also affects every other hormonal process in our bodies. This is a very serious issue when we've got plastic everywhere, but especially in our food too. All food is covered in plastic. That's how it's packaged. That's how we buy it. So if you think about that, it's really scary. Even our water, we think we're being healthy by buying bottled water, but it's bottled in plastic. And if it's kept stored in some warmish storage place, like the back room of a 7-Eleven or wherever we're buying that bottled water, that bottle is softer. You know, when you leave your bottled water in a car and it's like softer and squishier because it's been in the heat, it's because the plastic is leaching away into the liquid on the inside. So it's just kind of scary if you think about it. But I mean, when our grandparents were growing up or our great grandparents were growing up, what they ate every day was food that was, you know, kind of by God's design. It came straight from the earth. It was grown in their garden or in a farm nearby. And the livestock was grown on a farm or ranch nearby or in their own backyard. Lots of people had chickens and cows and goats. The fats that they ate were animal fats. Butter, lard, and tallow were the main fats that everybody cooked with. Today, that's just not true anymore. It's the industrialized seed oils that are primarily in our food that make it fattening, or I mean, there's a million functions of seed oils in our food. But, you know, we were gaslit and told that these animal fats, which had kept our ancestors from obesity and chronic illnesses for generations. Now, they may have died of other things, right? There was lots of water contamination and bad hygiene, you know, maternal mortality, and there were other things that were killing them, but they weren't getting heart disease and they weren't obese and they weren't getting diabetes. And all the things that kill us today are not things that killed humans 200 years ago or 100 years ago. And I don't know, like, that's usually touted as like this huge advance in, you know, public health, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure if it's better to be, you know, slowly deteriorating over the last 40 years of your life to complete immobility and chronic illness. I don't know. So we want the best of everything. We want the best food and the best medicine to keep us alive and the best hygiene and sanitation and clean environments. So it's a holistic problem. It's everywhere. It's not just food. It's also our environment. But it's also, I would argue, a theological problem. It's a stewardship problem. You know, we think about this a lot in healthcare sharing ministries because we are accountable to the community for how we spend our dollars, which are paying for each other's medical bills. And so when you think about that, is it right for us to take our brothers and sisters' hard-earned dollars and spend it on healthcare for diseases that we could have prevented if we had taken a little more agency, but also if we had had more information? So I don't like to blame in any of this. Like I said, when I was growing up, I thought that deli sandwich that my mom made was absolutely, you know, made with love and health food. And, you know, most of us don't have this information about nutrition. The government has gotten it wrong for decades. Even now, they're admitting that the food pyramid was actually toxic and, you know, it was all wrong and it was inverted and upside down. You know, we were told that saturated fats, which are basically animal fats, were terrible for us, even though that's what humans had lived on for millennia. So I think that we are only obligated to the light we have, right? I mean, that's sort of a theological principle. We're only culpable for what we know. And when we know better, we do better. So I think having this information about either whether it's from the CDC or whatever the FDA is saying, or, you know, what we're learning as holistic health has gotten more trendy and more information is available, I think that's great. And that every step that a family takes, whether, you know, they're going to start eating whole grains instead of processed grains, or they're going to start, you know, buying chicken from their local farm and putting that in their sandwiches instead of processed deli meat, every step that we take is a good step. And so we encourage any positive change.
There was a period of time not too long ago in my own life where I was just eating pretty much nothing but fast food, and I was beginning to feel kind of terrible. And then Ecclesiastes kind of struck me, because the whole point is we're going to die. Might as well enjoy your food. That kind of changed my outlook. Why am I eating stuff that isn't really food? What sort of scripture passages influenced how you perceive food and how we can eat food well to the glory of God and the nourishment of our bodies?
One of the more famous scriptures about this is Ezekiel 4:9, where the prophet Ezekiel is commanded to make bread from a mixture of grains and legumes. And I think there are seven grains: wheat, barley, beans, lentils, millet, and spelt. You think about that in the context of this anti-gluten craze, right? And people feeling that they're allergic to gluten, experiencing symptoms from processed bread. You see that actually bread is not the problem, according to scripture. It's what's in it. And so, you know, if you have actual farm fresh wheat and you have millet and spelt, lentils, barley, like whole grains are God's gift to us and commanded by God. And you think about in the Holy Eucharist and Jesus himself feeding us. And so bread's not the problem. And I think that it's gotten a little bit of a bad rap. Even gluten, which is just a protein in the bread that makes it stretchy. Gluten is not the enemy. It's all the stuff that's in bread. A lot of us have the experience, if we're lucky enough, fortunate enough to be able to travel the world, we can see in Europe, you know, I go and I eat white bread pasta, white grain bread and croissants and baguettes. We don't feel as bad. We don't have the gastrointestinal symptoms that we do eating those same foods in America that we do in Europe. What's different? You know, there are different policies about how agriculture is treated and what you can put into food in those countries. And it's something we need to think about.
You mentioned treating food like medicine. Practical steps that our listeners could take.
Yeah. So one example from the scripture is constantly we hear about the land of milk and honey, right? And what does that mean? Why would we use that phrase? You know, everyone loves sweet things. Our bodies are designed for sweet things. You know, the reason we have fruit in the summer is we're supposed to load up on sweetness, get fat for the winter to survive the winter. We're not supposed to be eating that sweetness year round, right? It's only now in our modern food supply that can get a strawberry from Peru to our table in 5 days that's even a possibility. But in most of human history, there were seasonal changes in what was available in the food supply. So that would be one of the first steps I would say is eat seasonally. So whatever is around that grows around you naturally from the farmers or at least in the wild, when it comes to fruit and vegetables, eat those at that time of year. You will not die for not having strawberries, you know, except in late August. You will not die. So like, you don't even have to have fruit at all in a given month, right? Because most humans haven't had that available and somehow it's okay. So if you didn't have a Giant or a Safeway or a Wegmans or a Kroger or Walmart, eat what you would eat and be able to grow around you. The second thing I would say is when we think about sugar, of course we like sweets, of course. Milk and honey, two sweet items. Milk is sweet naturally and honey, of course. Not all sugar is bad. Sugar created by God is great. And honey is created by bees and God. And milk is created by cows or goats or humans and God. And so these are foods that are perfectly designed to be healthy. And honey is a great substitute for any sugar fix that you might have. So every morning I use probably an irresponsible amount of honey in my tea. I like to call it honey water, but honey has a ton of antimicrobial properties. Not every calorie is the same as other calories. For many years, we were taught through the Weight Watchers regime that like calories in, calories out, like weight loss is all about restricting calories. And that isn't actually true. Our body uses calories differently and it reacts to calories differently. So when it gets a tablespoon of honey versus a tablespoon of Splenda or a tablespoon of refined powdered sugar, it's going to treat those differently. So I would say start to make little swaps like that. Whole grains instead of refined white flour and honey and maple syrup, organic in both cases, instead of cane sugar or refined sugar.
This ties in so nicely. One of my favorite authors is Wendell Berry, whose Anthropology. Yeah, if you're familiar with him, man is meant to be connected to the land. And one thing he tells, you know, city dwellers when they ask, what can we do if we live in the city, is eat well. Buy from your farm rather than the store. Would you have recommendations for resources where people can shop well? And what should we be looking for? Are there farms that people can connect with and just get products directly from the farms?
100%, yes. And there are a number of farms that deliver to your door. There's one that we use in this area called Harmony Acres. There's a bunch of different Amish farms that will deliver across the country out of Pennsylvania, out of Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and they'll ship to you. There are a bunch of them. A great source is a website called the Weston A. Price Foundation. I believe it's westonaprice.org. Also, if you're looking for safe and reliable raw dairy, raw milk or raw cheese, which has a number of good nutritional effects, provided that it's done properly and with good sanitation and hygiene. Realmilk.com is a great website to help you find this stuff. If you Google a regenerative farm near you, there's also another website called farmmatch.com, I believe, that you can put your zip code in and find farms that will either deliver to you, ship to you, or are local to you that are following regenerative practices. Not every farm, just because it's from a farm, doesn't mean that it's healthy or safe because of the chemicals and the pesticides that are used and just the monocropping. Because really where we get our nutrients from is the soil. Plants don't have nutrients in and of themselves. They get them from the soil. And so you want soil to be very nutrient dense. But in our mass industrialized farming practices, we have basically denuded the soil from nutrients. We just plant one crop during the one part of the year, and then the rest of the year, it looks like the surface of the moon. Or even in an organic farm, if you're doing all organic means is that it doesn't have like gross pesticides and chemicals on it. That doesn't mean the soil's good and it's got lots of nutrients. Organic is sort of the minimum, but you also want regeneratively raised food that incorporates plant life with animal life. You think about how Moses or Abraham or Jacob would have been farming. If they were farming, they would have livestock walking over the grasslands and their feces would fertilize the grasslands. And then birds come behind that and peck at the ground and put that fertilizer more and more into the ground. It captures the carbon and the nitrogen and actually can change the climate above the soil because it's this carbon capture system that's going. It's so healthful and it's so biological. And of course, it's designed by God with all these animals. And so to the extent that we are using regenerative farming practices, which incorporate multiple crops, multiple grasses, and livestock all at once, it's a beautiful symbiotic ecosystem that is designed to make us healthy and to maximize nutrient density in our food that we consume, whether it's the animals who've been eating that wonderful plant life, the grasses, or it's the plants that grow up after them.
Is there anything important that you think you'd like to throw in that I have not asked about?
It's really important for our health and for our souls to be part of a community. We learned this from Weight Watchers, right? Like, doing this in a group, in a community with accountable people that you answer to regularly and that are sharing and collaborating, that's really helpful. So the silver lining, the blessing of COVID was that it brought communities and churches, religious believers back together to farm together, to eat together, to live together, to homeschool together. And I would argue that doing health and healthcare together is another way that we can feed our souls and our souls' need for connection and brotherhood and fellowship. And that's, you know, one great way to do that is to just exit kind of the corrupt bureaucratic insurance system and join a healthcare sharing ministry. So that's kind of like a homeschool co-op for healthcare. And healthcare sharing ministries allow us to be stewards of each other's resources and to hold each other accountable for living healthy lives and to get good ideas from other families and what they're doing and to share, like, oh, they grow great tomatoes and they're able to have chickens that I don't have the yard for. And they're out there with the fruit trees that I can't seem to make grow in my house or in my yard. So it's this beautiful symbiotic relationship that we live in community. That's what Jesus commanded us to do and to take care of one another and to bear each other's burdens. So I would say that all of it matters and all of it helps contribute to the health of our bodies and souls.
You've been listening to His People on Pilgrim Radio. Many thanks to our guest, Dr. Katie Talento, Executive Director of the Alliance of Healthcare Sharing Ministries. Go to ahcsm.org. Tomorrow on His People, it's Alex McFarland on evidence he believes indicates we are living in the end times.
Something else, though, globally, the breakdown of the family, globally, the imposition of a militant moral relativism. Never at any other time in history, never at any time in history has there been masses of people in powerful positions saying that there aren't two genders.
That's tomorrow at the same time, right here on His People. Thanks for listening.